Goedemorgen, good morning. Good morning, guys. Welcome to this talk about physical security and the bridging the gap between physical security and cybersecurity. Welcome, good to see you all. A little bit about myself. My name is Jasper. Worked 20 years in telecommunication engineering, AT&T and CMG, and stepped about 15 years ago in the wonderful world of security. And then it all comes full circle, because at the end of the day, physical security is also a lots of ICT integration and security. So BAVAG is well known, of course, for the snacks last night. I hope you enjoyed it. Yay. Okay, may I introduce my team to you? This is my team of pen testers. And together we will enlighten you on some of the pen tests of the physical security today. Okay, the projects where we are involved worldwide, I will show you a few kind of random examples and dig a little bit deeper into what kind of philosophy is there behind physical security, what kind of standards are we using. So if we protect a Google data center worldwide, how do we know it is secure? Or if we take, for example, a courthouse here in Amsterdam, how do we know it's secure? Well, there are standards for that. There are standards for physical security. And let's say I see a door or a wall or a window pane. How do I know what level of security I can expect there? Well, there is a standard for that. So there's a standard for resistance classes, weerstandklasse in Dutch. And so assume you have a door like this, or a door of a data center, and let's assume it has resistance class 5. What does that mean? It means that I can use specific power tools to hammer and try to destroy the whole thing, plus everything above, because all the resistance classes, they add up. If you have RC2, it is RC2 plus RC1. So it means I'm an experienced guy. I'm able to put at least 1500 kilo of static power on it. I'm allowed to use power drills. So even an angle grinder, I can prepare the whole thing for 40 minutes, and I have 15 minutes of pure contact of all these goodies to hammer and to break into this door. And still it needs to hold, because we said this door is RC5. That's how it works. And these things are tested, rigorously tested. So you have professional people who certify this, and they destroy it. Everything they do the entire day is to break stuff. It's a nice job. What if I don't use tools, but I want to shoot and blow things up? Well, there are standards for that as well. So for panels and door, it's the FB class. For glass panes, it's BR. But the level is the same, so FB6 is the same as BR6. So let's take a window pane. I'm sitting behind this BR6 glass pane. I've got one here. So you see it's layered. So you see glass, PU plastic, glass, PU plastic. Let's make it non-splinter. I'm having a coffee or a Club Mate, and I'm sitting behind this window pane. And you're trying to shoot with your AK-47, what does it mean? The result is, this glass will not splinter into my coffee or Club Mate, because it's BR6. And AK-47 is less than that. That's how standards are tested, and that's how they are certified. So we had physical abuse, we had shooting and stuff. Unfortunately, if you look at threats, vehicles are used as a threat as well. There are many examples. Many municipalities are trying to keep vehicles away by putting walls and concrete blocks in the city. I will show a little bit later why that is not always a good idea, because at the end of the day, you have to deal with kinetic energy, and you have to stop that kinetic energy, or make sure that kinetic energy is put away and steer into the ground. So let's call our test team again and see what does that mean if you take these concrete blocks. Well, let's do some testing. see if we can stop a vehicle with these concrete blocks. Unfortunately not. Let's look again. These concrete blocks, called mega blocks or jumbo blocks, they are 1.60 meters, they weigh 2,400 kilograms. However, if you take the kinetic energy, the mass that inside the vehicle, it easily pushes it away. Some municipalities, like the city of The Hague, put them all around and they love them. In order to make sure that they don't scratch the surface, they put them on wooden panels. Brilliant. They slide even better. Concrete blocks can be okay if you arrest them into the ground. I've seen examples in the city of Dresden where they made a slot around the Christmas market and they just lowered them 5 or 10 centimeters into the ground. And that's enough, then you arrest the block, because if you want to stop a vehicle, you have to stop a vehicle. Nothing wrong about that. Absolutely stop a vehicle.
This is about speed and mass, right?
Absolutely.
Could you use them successfully in smaller streets where you're not able to get the right speed to push them away? Right?
I will come back. Good question. I will come back to that later. And so, because at the end of the day, since you mentioned it, the kinetic energy, as you know from your old science class, the kinetic energy is mass times speed. Well, the mass is fixed because it weighs what it weighs, but the speed you can influence. And I will come back to that later. Speed reduction and standoff is vitally important. So we know it's possible to actually stop a vehicle. Still, let's go back to critical infrastructure. Example is an electricity network. This is the high voltage switching field of TenneT in the Netherlands, in Diemen, close to Amsterdam. Let's say you want to protect this as a case. Well, then from a design point of view, there are standards to take into account. A little bit of history, I will go into the test and directives that they are. Like with cyber directives, also in the physical world, there are directives, because at the end of the day, we have to deal with the amount of kinetic energy. HVM is the overall name for hostile vehicle mitigation. So the vehicle is your threat. And what kind of solutions do we have? So the background is, we had American standard, the so-called K standard, K4, K8, K12, and in the UK, they had the PAS 68. PAS 68 was actually the standard, and PAS 69 is the method how to install them. And they wanted to harmonize that on a European level, but then they figured out, well, the two most important standards in the world are the American one and the UK one. Why don't we try to harmonize those? Because the difference was not so much. One was using a typical vehicle of 7,200 kilos, and the other one 8,000, so you can recalculate that. That's not a big deal. And then, of course, because of Europe, they said, you know, why don't we take one global standard? And that was the IWA-1, which turned into an ISO standard. And that's pretty recent. So we have a standard how to deal with that. So if you have a certification, how does a certification of a physical security look like? Well, it looks like V7200 vehicle N2, 64 kilometers an hour, 90 degrees, 53 centimeters, and 6.1 meter. Okay, what does that mean? Well, we talk about a vehicle. It's not a boat, it's not an airplane. The threat is a vehicle. The type of vehicle is a particular mass and a particular type. In this case, we see it's 7,200 kilo, and it's an N2 vehicle. So it's a, let's say, mid-sized to large vehicle. The speed is 64 kilometers an hour. That sounds like an odd speed, but it makes sense in terms of harmonization, because 64 kilometers an hour equals 40 miles an hour. So the angle is 90 degrees. So for a bollard, it's straight on. But actually, for a roadblocker or a wall, you can determine either it's 90 degrees or you can test 45 degrees, because it has a different dynamic. The 0.53 meters is actually the penetration behind the reference point. So you have a reference point, say, okay, zero penetration is before this point, and you can have some penetration. And that's a fact of life. There is dispersions of major debris. If you have a vehicle, stuff will come out. You arrest a vehicle, but the hood will come off, the cabin will come off, and there's some stuff that will come off. That's why even with a hostile vehicle, mitigation is a solution. You need some standoff between your solution and the building itself you try to protect. So much about the standard. We moved that into an ISO standard. Forget the details, but basically it runs from 1,500 kilos vehicle all the way up to 30 ton. If you can imagine, if you create a threat which weighed 30 tons and you're able to make 80 kilometers an hour, you have quite a bit of kinetic energy to deal with. Whatever solution you create, like in cyber, if there's a way to bypass it, people will bypass it, as simple as that. So you have to make sure that you think about your vital infrastructure. What do you want to protect and how do you protect it? But also think out of the box. So here's my protected area, whatever it is. So a piece of vital infrastructure, and you put a row of bollards on it because there's a lot of traffic around. So what is your typical attack vector? Well, it's this, because you know people can make a lot of speed and they can come from a particular angle, and this is the most logical way where they come. But you have to think in terms of less logical ways, because if I'm the bad guy and I want to penetrate a particular way, I will not take the standard route, I will take an alternative route. But you have to take into account what you design today can change tomorrow, because here is a piece of building that can become a park. So you have to think in terms of, okay, overall, how do I design this? One practical example is, and we talked earlier about how to reduce the speed, is you can build a chicane, you can build a corner, you can build all kinds of simple things to keep the speed down. Once the people from the theme park Efteling asked me about security of the main gate and how do we deal with this, and all kinds of questions on how should we use X-ray or not, and those kind of typical example. And my answer was, well, you have one major challenge, and that is 280 meters. Do something about it. And it's simple, you know, put some plants in it, put some concrete blocks, arrest it in the ground, so make sure you have to put the speed down. That is standoff in terms of speed. There's another way where you need standoff, and that is make sure the vehicle, also from an explosive point of view, is not able to come very close to your infrastructure. This is the federal building in Oklahoma. You probably recognize it. It's a 1995 bombing. Timothy McVeigh, he rented a truck. He made a mixture of explosive, actually a very large quantity of explosive. And he created a so-called ANFO bomb, ammonium nitrate fuel oil bomb. So he took a lot of fertilizer, two and a half tons of fertilizer. He took some more accelerators, so diesel fuel, nitromethane, which supercars are using and model aircrafts, some other explosive devices as accelerate, and some triggers. He put it in front of the building. This guy, he had something against the US government, but he had no knowledge about structures, about architecture whatsoever. However, it was a very open facility there, so he could park his truck with the bomb next to the building, and by coincidence, next to one of the main columns, one of the main pillars of the building. 186 people died, mainly because of the collapse of the building, not because of the explosive. So standoff is very important. The kinetic energy, the blast from an explosive, is decreasing exponentially in distance. So if you have a 5,000-pound bomb, within a few meters, you still have hundreds of psi of pressure. If you go to 100 meter, it's close to 1 psi, 1 pound per square pressure. So it's decreasing very fast. That's why whatever you do, you need distance between your building and a potential threat. Here, one more example. I believe it is Istanbul, and the arrow points towards a particular column. This was before the event, and this was after the event. The entire building is leveled, but just 18 meters was enough for the column to stand. So you see how quickly the blast actually reduces. So what kind of solutions do we have in place? Well, you can build something in between which is pure from a construction point of view. You can put in cable barriers. You can put in bollards, columns, or roadblockers, and I will show a few examples of all of them. This is a very simple solution. So you just dig, so you take the ground out and you make sure that the angle and the width is sufficient enough. And so look at the angle here. So if you have, it's steep enough and it's wide enough, even with 64 kilometers an hour, this vehicle has no chance. Sometimes if you have a solution where people put some concrete on, actually if you take a relatively high vehicle, your threat goes airborne. It flies over and it lands inside your structure. But this is very secure and successful because it has no way to jump up. So this is one way of a very simple solution. You can also put up a cable barrier. What does it mean? You dig a hole into the ground, 60 centimeters wide. You put a pretty strong steel beam, and a few meters away, and you take 4 centimeters big steel cables, and you arrest them, and you put some tension on it, and that's very successful. Here, you might recognize this next to the Highway A12. It's the new chemical test center of the OPCW. They needed special protection from a physical point of view, electronic point of view. And the architect, he was not aware of this kind of solution, so he suggested a concrete wall. And we said, well, that's not certified, but this is a certified solution. He said, well, that's actually more transparent than I had in mind. So let's put this in. And so here you see some main columns and some smaller support columns, and they coincide, they go together with the light poles, and it's transparent and is fully IWA 14.1 certified, so very secure. We all know bollards that you see all around. Actually, there are two types of bollards. You have smaller bollards that you see all around in the city, which are more to steer traffic in the right direction. They're not certified. They're not supposed actually to be a crash-rated solution. So if you hit them, they break. And in cities, you see that all over. And the second type is actually crash-rated vehicles stopping bollards, and you see them all over in the city. This is the city of Amsterdam, and it's a classical one. The classical one, you dig a deep hole, you make a concrete structure, lots of rebar, lots of steel, and lots of concrete under the pavement, and you have your bollard above there. Basically, it's a strong steel structure with a neat sleeve that goes over it. And you can have them in different colors. The more complex ones are the dynamic bollards. It's either electric or a hydraulic system. You need quite some infrastructure under the ground, but then you have a very solid solution. If it's up, it's arrested and it will stop your vehicle. If it's down, you have free flow of traffic. Usually they put two rows behind them because then you can create a lock situation. At any time, there's one row of bollards up because one threat could be the first one goes down, a legitimate vehicle comes in, and if there's no alternative, then a threat vehicle can just push it out and he's in. So that's why a lock situation of two rows of bollards is very effective. You see, there's some stuff that you need. You need a cabinet to steer the whole thing. And drainage. Drainage is very important. If you don't have drainage, the things get blocked by sand and water in no time. So how do you build this? Well, first, you dig a hole in the ground. And you prepare your drainage. You make a concrete floor with a lot of rebar and make sure this is level. Then the first, your working floor is ready when it's hardened, and you can put your first section of a bollard in. This is for an American embassy somewhere around the world. Here you see the drainage system and more rebar. This guy got out, I have to, yeah. No worries, he got out. And then we pour the concrete. Not all the way to the top, because you have some pavement as well. So you realign the pavement, and there you have working solution. But you saw, you need a big hole in the ground. You need to dig 1.80 meters and stuff. And you know what is the problem nowadays? There are too many cables. Everyone has internet. Everyone has tons of cables. And even at your house, but you know, if you look at critical infrastructure, they even have more tons, zillions of cables. So they figured, why don't we create a solution which is less deep, a so-called shallow mount solution? And that was quite smart. But how do you get the strength? At the end of the day, you still need to vector out all this kinetic energy. Well, they figured out if you create this kind of cassette kind of shape of steel, which is hollow in between. And if you interlink those, if the ground plate is big enough, then you have enough foundation to get rid of all the kinetic energy. So you need at least three systems to be interconnected to make it crash rated. So if you just take one section and you put it in the ground, it's not crash rated. But this connection makes it very strong. So what do you do? It's only 18 centimeters, but you fill it up with light concrete. So the structure, the steel, and the concrete, and the fact that they are interconnected makes it a very, very strong solution, and you don't need to dig so much into the ground. So here you see the sleeve with light, without light. You can all do all kind of things. So we had this nice little project. We put 1,200 of these shallow mount bollards at Schiphol Airport. Interesting project. And here you see, first you see the kind of the, almost like the naked structure. And then secondly, the sleeve goes over, which the customer decides in whatever shape or form or color he wants to have. Here's some more examples, because if you have the structure, you can put all kind of structure on top of it to make sure you steer all the people who are walking around there in the right direction. Now this is all fixed. What about dynamic bollards? If you want to have a shallow mount dynamic bollard, you still need to have that same nice big base plate. So they created a solution of sliding bollards, which is really, from a technical point of view, from an engineering point of view, quite a marvel, because this slit, this opening, is only 1 centimeter. So can you imagine? You have a solution where you want to stop a 7.5-ton vehicle, 64 kilometers an hour. You have this steel structure, and at the bottom, there's only 1 centimeter thick steel. That's a challenge. Well, our king relies on it, so that's fine. Our parliament relies on it, and the trick is actually here. This little hat is making sure that it cannot tilt. Pretty safe, as you see here. People are quite comfortable with it. So it opens here. For people not familiar, this is the House of Parliament, the old one. Actually, it is safer than the old time. Previously, we had dynamic bollards that came from the ground and suddenly popped up, and there were a lot of bicycle users here, and this is more predictable, and so less accidents since we have this. And here where this truck is, you have a second row of bollards, which is not in use at this moment, but if the tread level is higher, then you can create a nice lock. And so, yeah, please go ahead.
How do you make it not jam? Because if it's so thin, then maybe something that goes below a bottle.
It's a good one. So and on one hand, customers need to clean them because there's a lot of soil and dirt and stuff comes in. If this blocks, for example, during the winter, then that's a problem. Let's go back to slides. Here, we put heating in the ground because, you know, in the winter, you don't want it to be clogged up by ice and stuff. So you need to clean it, that's one. And secondly, there is a ton of hydraulic power behind it. So if there's some soil or stuff, it pushes right through. Yeah, so this is all hydraulic, and it's pretty strong. If you look at the hydraulic pumps that are behind this, it's pretty solid. So let's ask our penetration team again to do some tests on it. Here we have the same solution, but then with one sliding bollard. You can have them with one, with two, or with four, like we have them at Schiphol Airport, but this is one. You see the base plate, again, only 18 centimeters, and the slot is slit is only 1 centimeter. Let's see if it holds the vehicle. There we go. Okay, looks like we have a full arrest because this is the reference point of the test. It looks like zero penetration. We have some major debris. The major debris is less than 10, 15 meters, so that's a very good. You see the load of the vehicle comes straight out. Because all this kinetic energy, even the kinetic energy, the mass of the load needs to go somewhere. So it goes straight through. And zero penetration because this is the reference point. So does it still work? That's a major question because yes, it does. Of all the solutions that we use, that's one of the major things, because a concept of operation could be, I don't want to break in, I just want to block the entrance. If there's a prison or any facility with quite few entrances, it could be that you just want to block the whole thing and make a mess behind there. So. Yes, it is. It is. It is. Can be scratched, can be damaged, but it's still certified. Of course, if there's a major hit like this, you know, the engineers will look at it if it's still okay, but it's still certified. So if there's a second hit 5 minutes later, it's still certified.
Yeah.
Because fundamentally, it doesn't change the structure of it. So the dynamics are still the same. So one CONOPS could be, I just blocked the entrance. And the second could be, okay, if it still works, then you can take, you know, a vehicle, police vehicle, whatever, a fire department, push the vehicle out, and the ambulances can go in and out. So that's an important thing, that it still works. There's one solution that's even heavier than a bollard. This is a road blocker. A road blocker can withstand 30 tons of 80 kilometers an hour, so that's a lot of kinetic energy. And we use them a lot for data centers. For my preference, some of the road blockers are pretty close to the actual facility. So I would welcome, and sometimes you see several layers of security. If you look at this, maybe meters away or 10 meters away, there's another solution with bollards. This is a famous front door with notorious people living there. And you see a lot of combination where you see a combination of a road blocker and speed gate. Speed gate, again, in a lock situation. And this is pretty solid solution. So how do we build these? In the old days, we had only fixed road blockers, which are 90 centimeters. Again, we need to dig a big hole.
nowadays, even here, you see a shallow mound solution. This is Schiphol Airport. This is only 30 centimeters. Because it's like a harmonica, they have segments. They segment, go fall and fall and fall, and they're just 40 centimeters. So how do you build this? You take this solution, and it's very simple because you just slide in a lot of rebar. So the combination of concrete, rebar, and the steel construction make it super strong. And here you see the finished product, and this is fully certified for to handle trucks. Well, let's test again. Can it handle a truck? Doing these kind of certifications take a lot of time, a lot of money. You see there's some debris coming off, but there's no chance this truck comes through. There's one advantage. After the test, you can keep the license plate. It's a nice perk of doing that.
So where do you find all the drivers?
Yeah, well, that's our test team. They volunteer. So a bit of the technology behind, we're still good on time. There you go. There's some damage, but at the end of the day, it's still working. After this crash, it's still working. The paint can go off, all fine, but it's still working. Now, how do we steer this whole thing? At the end of the day, with relay systems, with PLCs, we use a variety of PLCs for these kind of solution. Here you see some brands, there are more, Panasonic, Feig, all famous. So how does it work? How does it start? If you take the most simple solution, it's a boom barrier. Very simple. How do you start? Well, you just write a program. What do I want this boom barrier to do and when? What are the circumstances? Because it's not just open and close with a button. You have magnetic loop in the ground. If there's no car, it will not open. So you create the input and output. You define what it needs to do. The PLC is kind of translating this to a physical connection, you know, wires in a particular color. If you figure this out, you can design and build your street cabinet. Okay, so you have your street cabinet, then you build it, and you put it in place. Of course, this is not just the electronics. You have to think about your resistance class, because you can take all the cyber measures in the world. If someone has easy access to your PLC cabinet, hey, it's a no-brainer. He doesn't even need to hack, because you just short-circuit two wires and your solution opens. So resistance class is super important for street cabinets. You all know this stuff, but you know, I repeat it anyway because it's important. Even for dedicated systems like street cabinets who are not connected to the internet, and that's how we use it. When we implement something, we use dedicated closed networks. You still have to do your inventory control. You still have to do your asset management, because the advantage, if it's not connected, that it is somewhat less vulnerable. There's a bigger air gap. However, you need to physically access a PLC if you want to update it. So you need to have your patch management and your version control, because it's manual labor. Someone with a laptop needs to go to a street cabinet and update it if needed. That's why your ISO 27001 policy, your OT security, your IEC 62443 is very important in that. But this is all what you are familiar with. So these solutions pretty solid. I hope it gave some background about how these solutions are built up, how you stop vehicle. And with this, I conclude my presentation. Questions? Yes. Too much open space. So there was room for a car. Actually, 2 months ago was in the news that a drunk guy got in front of the entrance. He didn't hit anything or anyone, but still, there was no solution to prevent it. So is there a solution in place? Well, if you see in the news, nope. Will there be a solution in place? Yeah, probably pretty soon. That's in a lot of security areas that if people say, well, nothing ever happens here, they kind of reluctant to put some solutions in place unless there's an incident. Yep. Then there's tons of attention of, let's say, the highest level, and then very quickly you see solutions in place. But that's kind of the nature of a bus, of people, I think. Yes, please.
So before you start physical testing the material, you can do a lot of calculation, just really looking at the material and calculating how much energy it takes and how it spreads.
Yes.
How is the timeline about it? How much time do you spend on the theoretical testing and how much on the physical testing?
Kind of 20-80, and so we have we do the first calculation ourselves, then we outsource it to a very special engineering company who is only doing this for a living, is statical and dynamic and load, and it's not just load coming from a threat, but even simple load. If you have a super big prison speed gate, what is the wind force on it? What if you have wind force 11? It's 25, 24 square meters. So also those kind of calculations are taken into account. So kind of 20-80. Yep. More questions? Yes.
Looking at all the trucks you were using, you didn't have any articulated trucks. Do they cause other problems?
Well, these are the typical test vehicles. And of course, what you don't see in here, but what could be a threat would be like a crane or a tractor. They're not a part of the standard tests, but for me, the most important information to know would be what the mass is. So if you test a truck, what does it say, you have a 7.5-ton truck, or you have a 7.5-ton tractor, well, tractor is by nature a little bit slower maybe, so that's fine. That's fine. We had a lot of protesters in the Netherlands over the last couple of years of angry farmers. And the Minister of Justice said on the television, well, don't come to the House of Parliament because there are bollards there who are very strong. So they didn't try. But for sure, their tractor would be broken. Yeah. A good question. A train of 50 tons is beyond, let's say, the reasonable limit of those kind of solutions. If you have, let's take a tank of 50 tons with 80 kilometers an hour, it will seriously damage the bollard. It might break it. We simply don't know. It's not tested and not certified. That's same for shooting. The shooting is all the way up to BR6, BR7. What if I take an RPG? That's beyond the reasonable limit. Will I break the glass with an IPG, with a rocket, or with a cannon? Yes, it will. So that's why you have these certifications, because you design what your required security level is, and you anticipate. However, if you go beyond that, yeah, if you drop a bomb on a vehicle, it's broken anyway. So there's always a reasonable limit to what it is certified and whatnot. Good question. It will spoil my coffee moment, certainly. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's absolutely true. Yes.
How do you find that these PLC vendors react to your questions on secure protocols, secure PLCs?
It depends which brand. Some brands think, well, it's your problem. It's not. We make PLCs, and good luck. And others take it very serious. And also, if we come with particular questions, they answer it properly, but not all of them. So it depends. It depends. So we rather rely on our own philosophy than purely rely on one PLC vendor, because we don't know what their process behind is and how solid that is. Yeah.
So standards, they are pretty fixed. We agree on something, and that's.
Yeah.
But we see perpetrators being able to get heavier and heavier equipment and weapons.
Yeah.
Is there any dynamics in that? So will standards be adjusted? periodically or reviewed?
There's no standard fixed time for periodic reviews. They are periodically reviewed. Unfortunately, it depends on the incidents. If we see a trend that, let's say, hostile vehicle mitigation needs to be heavier, also the standards will become heavier. Some clients, some undisclosed clients, they choose for solutions that are beyond the standard because they say, okay, we want standard X plus whatever we want on top. And we have those clients as well. They anticipate a higher standard than the standard. Yeah, please.
Would you still enjoy your tea if you would know that the threat would be an experienced shooter with a long rifle? If he loads himself with ammunition?
I would take every threat serious. I would also take my coffee and tea serious, but every threat I would take serious, but even more serious if it's an experienced shooter. Yeah. But I might even anticipate the situation if I think that there might be an experienced shooter. Yeah.
The other question is, this is urban myth. Sometimes it works, you put a plate after the bullets and the bullets go down. Or how do you say it?
It's a good point, and that comes back to the programming of the PLC, and so what the purpose is. So what you see with a normal traffic solution, let's say you go shopping at the Albert Heijn, and there's a speed gate there in the parking garage. The only thing that speed gate needs to do is to regulate your traffic. You don't want pedestrian walking in and out, you want to keep them out, but if there's a vehicle, it needs to open. So the only thing it is programmed, if there's some magnetic distortion on the magnetic loop, it opens. So if you put some metal there, it opens because it's programmed that way. But that is not a security solution, that is a traffic guidance solution. Yeah.
You talk about PLCs and this program. What kind of methods do you have to test these kind of programmed PLC for vulnerabilities or logic errors within? Do you have kind of testing method?
We have our own testing method that every solution we put in the field, we first test ourselves at our own workshop, at our own factory. We rely on particular certification that those kind of vendors have. We will not redo all the certification. It's not up to us to doubt any official European certification from others. So it's undoable to redo everything, but we do our checks and balances. Yeah. It's not so common, but it depends very much on the client, because most of our clients are in, let's say, the higher security level, and they have their own policies and own checks of pen testing. As you see, you can pen test it from a pure physical point of view, and that's spectacular, and you can pen test it more from an ICT point of view, and they're equally important. All right, guys, thank you very much for your attention. Enjoy your day. Yeah.